Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast exists because of the paid members at decodingtv.com. Become a paid subscriber and get access to ad-free episodes and early access to episodes. And support this podcast. Help it to keep going. Thanks to everyone at decodingtv.com who makes this podcast possible.
All men and women were created equal. If this is going to be the dawn of the seven, we have to first get through dusk.
No, just me. Now that right there is how you fucking audition. Don't touch my knuckles.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Streaming, a Decoding TV podcast. I'm David Chen, and I'm looking for a healer at Godolkin University with a very particular set of skills. Joining me today, she is a filmmaker and video essayist whose work can be found at youtube.com/@JessieGender. Jesse Earle.
Hey, I am here ready for someone to give me my own monologue back at me so I can clap to it. I didn't know you were going to play that specific clip too, by the way. I came up with that joke beforehand. And then you used the clip. I'm like, ah, dang it.
It's okay. It's okay. It looks like kismet. Synergy.
It is. There, yes, Jesse. Exactly. You read my mind. It's reviving. Reviving very hard.
This Week in Streaming is a show on the Decoding TV podcast feed that covers the most interesting shows available on streaming each week. We generally talk about the first episode or two or three, and then if it's good, we come back at the end of the season and review the entire season. And that's what we're doing today, right here on This Week in Streaming. Jesse was here to talk about the first few episodes of Gen V. She is back to discuss the entire season. We are, of course, going to start with our overall thoughts. Should you watch the show? Was the first season worth it? Is it worth renewing, which Amazon Prime Video recently did for a season two, as far as I understand? And then we are going to dive into not only a recap of major events that happened this season, but also a detailed discussion of the finale of the show. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. And find us across all platforms, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, @DecodingTV. All right. Jesse Earle, when we talked about Gen V last, we both had a great time with the first three episodes of the show. And I was very curious if they could continue the momentum. I was very curious if this show would continue to be good. So we're now at the end of the first season. We've seen every single episode now. What do you think? Was this worth the journey? If you're listening to this right now, you haven't seen any of Gen V. Should people go all the way to the end of the first season of Gen V? What do you think, Jesse?
I think the answer is an overwhelming yes. I really, really, really enjoyed this season quite a lot. I do think it lost a little of its momentum towards the middle of the season. I think it kind of spun its wheels for a little bit longer than I would have wanted it to. But on the whole, I think the characters were extremely well established. I thought they had some really great revelations about the characters, especially some characters that I thought were kind of just side characters and really kind of came into their own as the season went along. And those revelations helped me even see them in a new light for their actions that we had been watching at the beginning of the season. I always love when a show does that, where it like adds depth to a character's portrayal retroactively. And then the overall storyline felt like it had weight and impact, not only in this show, but honestly, it feels like going into the next season of The Boys, whenever that's going to come out, this feels like it actually has weight and meaning going into that series as well, that makes this show feel like it stands on its own and yet feels like it not just a superfluous thing to The Boys, but something that it carries like an equal weight to it, which I thought was really, really amazing to see, because it could have been very easy for Gen V just to feel like the, oh yeah, it's the side thing that, you know, if you like The Boys, you know, you can get really, it's like, no, this feels like it carries equal weight and importance as The Boys, which is not something I would have thought going into the show when I had just first heard it.
Yeah, I got to say, I don't know if I'm quite as hot on it as you are, but I also had a great time with the show. Yeah. I think overall, Gen V was highly enjoyable, a worthy addition to the Boys canon. And I have to say, for most of the season, I would say I enjoyed it more than recent seasons of The Boys,
yeah.
I would actually argue. And the reasons for that, I tried to articulate in our last conversation about it, but it's because of the smaller stakes. It's because mm-hmm. it really allowed us to focus on these characters and the dynamics between them. And with The Boys, I always feel like I'm getting distracted by
the end of the world.
Oh, it turns out it's a government conspiracy, or the president is a soup, or the person who's running to be president is a, you know, like, mm-hmm. and it just is like, okay, you know, it's such huge stakes in The Boys, whereas in this season of television, it's like, hey, can I get my roommates to like me?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like that's like a much more relatable set of stakes, in my opinion. I think the casting on the show is incredible.
Perfect, yeah,
just like. Every single actor really embodied that character. I don't think there's the bad performance among them. Like, I just thought it was wonderful how well these actors did. Many of whom are not widely known.
Yeah,
you know, like not widely known actors. Although that's definitely changed throughout the course of the season.
I would expect so. Yeah,
I think that the only thing that I didn't like that much about the show, honestly, you know, when we spoke, early on the season, we praised how the show took a very light touch with its integration to the Boys universe.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And how like, oh, you don't even need to have seen The Boys to enjoy the show. That isn't really true by the end of the season.
No, especially in episode 7.
Yeah, 7 and 8. Like, you really need to have seen The Boys to like fully understand the implications of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a bit of a bummer and prevents this show from fully standing on its own, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So that's the one big downside. Now, for other people, that's going to be a feature, not a bug.
Well, that was going to be my argument, too, is that I actually kind of like that because it goes to my point about being this show feeling like it has weight in terms of the overall The Boys universe. Because I've seen show spinoffs. I'm trying to think of like a good example off the top of my head. There's nothing immediately coming to mind, but I've seen shows that are spinoffs of larger series that it just feels like, oh, this is a superfluous thing that's just sort of there and is just there to like exist that as just another way to like, oh yeah, we want to make more money off of this franchise. But this actually feels like it honestly, if you had sold this as like a season of The Boys, it feels like it kind of fits very naturally in that narrative. And I kind of really like that, but I could also see that being, as you say, something detrimental to anybody who just wants to watch Gen V and not watch The Boys and sort of get a holistic experience on its own legs.
Yeah. You know, some examples of like spinoffs, Better Call Saul is like a
yes,
really good one.
Yes, yeah.
Obviously Walking Dead, there's been a lot of, now, one God, could argue Dead. That especially towards the end, Better Call Saul, yeah. did require knowledge of the original series, mm-hmm. Breaking Bad. I would say those, again, I made the same argument on Decoding TV. Those were the weakest part of that show, mm-hmm. in my opinion. Better Call Saul was more than strong enough to stand on its own completely independently of Breaking Bad. And when it tried to like lean more on Breaking Bad, that's when I thought it was at its weakest. And I feel the same way of Gen V. I feel like, hey, this is a show that like it can be its own. It can spawn its own universe of ideas and characters and realities. And instead, you know, the final few episodes do make this more feel like kind of a really good kind of special features for The Boys,
yeah,
as opposed to like this is its own classic show. That's a little bit unfair, but
I was saying, like, I feel like to me it feels like it integrates it well to in my opinion. But again, I get where it doesn't stand on its own, but for me it feels like it made the universe feel cohesive, I think, in an interesting way.
Yeah, that's true. And I'll try not to harp on this much.
No, it's fair.
I think you're right. You're like, if you are looking for another season of The Boys, I think this is a very competent thing that will fill in the gap.
Yes.
Between The Boys season 3 and 4, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of just, you know, but I was so impressed by how original some of those early episodes felt that I was hoping it would go perhaps in a different direction. There's one other thing I want to say about the show before we start diving into recap and spoilers. And that is that one of the things I like that it carries over from The Boys is the ultra violence mm-hmm. and the gore. And basically, it really gets at how physically unpleasant and disgusting having special powers would be in the real world.
Yep.
Which is something that The Boys touched upon. And I think this show really extends in a great way. It's like, wow, your body is like transforming in horrifying ways. You have abilities that can like kill people around you by accident. You know, like that would be like really terrifying. And Gen V really is able to capture what that feeling is like, especially if, you know, for taking place at a college. And when you're in college, you know, your body's going through changes, your feelings are going through changes and all these things. And so it's like, it's a great analogy, you know, for being puberty. In college to becoming mm-hmm. a soup and developing your superpowers. But also the show is just really bloody and gross and disgusting. And I greatly appreciate that.
Yeah, and it feels more natural in a weird way to a super universe where than in The Boys, where the boys, they usually, that grossness is usually there to heighten the sense of detachment the superheroes have from the rest of normal people, especially from the very first scene of The Boys, the very famous scene of The Boys. Whereas here, it feels like...
If I may expand upon that, right? Like, mm-hmm. basically what you're saying is that... it's the human, the non-supes
that are eviscerated
or decapitated mm-hmm. or have their limbs torn off in The Boys.
Yes, it's always there to like make it feel like there's this sort of god complex of the superheroes that like they are just above us all and we are all just ants to them. And it goes to that sort of like, you know, criticism of capitalism and all that sort of ideas that show is playing with. Whereas here, because... not all, but most of our characters are all superheroes and teenagers. It kind of, in a weird way, sort of normalizes it and again goes to what you were just talking about, how this show is much more about sort of emphasizing the weirdness of being in college and puberty and being a young kid, being like, I have to figure out my place in this world that is trying to get me to do a billion different things and tell me to be a billion different things, while also my body is being weird and strange and I'm figuring out what sex is. It I think matches the shows use their superpower abilities and the grossness that comes with that to their own specific strengths, which I think is great.
Yeah. And I think also, Jesse, worth drawing a contrast to virtually every other depiction of superpowers, mm-hmm. which is much more quote unquote clean, right? Mm-hmm. Much more sanitized. You don't see like Wonder Woman or Superman dealing with like the effects of heat vision on their skin or whatever, you know, like, and I think that this is something like, that's something all typically using powers comes with some kind of cost.
Yeah.
In The Boys and in Gen V. And often that cost is either psychological or it's physical. In the case of one of the characters, Kate, she gets it's like bursting blood vessels in her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Side story, by the way. random side event is one of my Instagram followers messaged me and said that she worked on the show.
Oh, wow.
And I said, what did you do on the show? She says, I made Kate's contact lenses.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was like, those are amazing because...
yeah, they look so good.
They had different kinds and like different... and they needed to stand up to scrutiny because there's many close-ups. Mm-hmm. Basically, one of the characters in the show, if you haven't seen it... when she uses her mind to push people to do things, it causes her eyes to become like super bloody and bloodshot. And the more she does it, the more bloody they become. And so there's like many different phases of her eyes being bloodshot, and it all looks very convincing and very great. And so,
yeah, no, everything. I always feel fully immersed in this world. And I know they have Bezos money, but still it's a TV show budget that they're doing this on. And I think it all looks fantastic.
I overall was very impressed with the visual effects as well. Mm-hmm. I thought they were really strong. A surprise at how much money it seems like was spent. It really feels like, it doesn't feel like, you know, there's some shows that it's like, oh, this is the spinoff and we're spending less money on it comparatively. Mm-hmm. This did not feel like that. This felt like they had a full kind of The Boys size budget for the season.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. So overall, it sounds like we're both big fans of the season. Mm-hmm. This is one of my favorite things I've watched this year. I just want to put that out there. Like, I had a great time watching this show, and you should check it out.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
So, let's get to spoilers for Gen V. And what we're going to do is we're going to discuss all the stuff leading up to the finale and kind of reflect on it a little bit. And then we'll just talk about the finale, what happens there.
Yeah.
So let's get into it. Let's talk about what happens with Emma and Sam. Emma, the girl who can shrink herself by throwing up. And Sam, who is the Patrick Schwarzenegger's brother, who has like super strength,
yes,
and other abilities.
And Muppet vision.
Muppet vision. So Emma helps Sam brutally escape the woods, allowing Sam to have his first taste of freedom in years. However, Sam is clearly mentally unwell and struggles with balancing his empathetic nature and his more angry, violent urges. Eventually, he and Emma sleep together and form the beginnings of a romantic relationship that starts to complicate as the rest of the woods conspiracy unravels, leading to the eventual revelation that Dean Shetty has created a soup-killing virus she hopes to make contagious. So let's talk about this plot line.
Mm-hmm.
I would say overall it's a solid plot line. I felt like the show didn't really start to grapple with what it would mean to be in love with a mentally unwell murderer until literally the last half of the final episode. You
yes,
know what I'm saying?
Like, I agree completely. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the only downside of this, because the two actors have great chemistry with each other, and you can believe how these two kind of people who are outsiders would like find a bond. And yeah, go ahead, Jesse. What were your thoughts on this whole
relationship? Oh, I was just my big feelings on it were kind of the same as yours. Is I felt like this alternatively felt too slow and too rushed at the same time.
Yes, yes.
Where they, I think in episode four, it might have been episode five or four, very early on with these two characters. You know, I made note of when we did our first review that I really liked their rapport with each other, and it worked really, really well, and they established it very clearly. But then immediately, I think they have sex and they sleep together. And I thought that would just felt very weird, especially considering that Sam is someone who's been locked up for most of his life and hasn't really had like outside contact. And it just felt like they went that route because it was like, this is the college show and we need to have college kids having sex to sort of establish that relationship. And it just didn't feel like it matched up really well with where they were trying to go, because I bought their connection and everything to do with their connection and like their struggling back and forth of like Emma trying to be there for Sam, but Sam sort of struggling with his mental health and like who I am and what it means to sort of be outside. I thought all of that worked for me, but I think they just like tried to shove it into a romantic context really, really quickly to sort of play into the expectation of a college level drama. And so I think of all the storylines of the show, I think that was the one that just, it felt again, way too rushed and way too slow at the same time, because they were just sort of trying to shove it into these beats that I don't think exactly matched up.
I agree with how it felt like overall, like with what you're saying. I do think I want to give the show a little bit credit in some regards.
Yeah.
First of all, when they first meet, I agree, that's a little rushed. Like, she kind of that all happens in like one night.
Yeah.
Is like she sneaks underground and then meets him and they start bonding right away. But, you know, when you're in college, maybe that kind of stuff does happen. I mean, not maybe, you know, I've definitely experienced something like that before. So it's like, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility. And then it does have them spend a lot of time with each other at the drive-in movie theater. Mm-hmm. So it does like dedicate some amount of time there. But it's when things like basically after the memory wipe occurs that I think it's like starts to get a little bit like what is
happening,
Emma's feelings and what is Sam states, you know, because really Sam's soul is kind of what this part of what this season is about. Marie is the main character and very important, but I think what happens to Sam is also probably one of the other plot lines I'm really invested in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think that like when he shows up and she doesn't remember him, that's a great moment.
That was a really wonderful
moment. I love that. That's a shocking moment. But then after that, you know, it starts to get a little bit more iffy in terms of their relationship but that said, I do support the fact that the show took the road less traveled and made him not be into what she was selling, you know, like mm-hmm. he chose the path of darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like an unconventional or not unconventional, but like it's the less safe path. And maybe they're saving a reunion for later seasons. But at the end of the day, I thought he was going to choose Emma, and instead he chooses his violent, murderous urges.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's kind of in line with the rest of the show, and I admire the decision.
Yeah.
So that's me defending the plotline.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. I think the thing that I'm getting hung up on, and it's weird for me because I'm usually the one that advocates for, like, we need more, like, sex in TV shows. It just, for me, it didn't match up where you feature this, the fact that Sam has been this guy locked up in this room for pretty much his entire life and he's been drugged and everything, and not to say that he's not a, you know, a 20 something year old kid who has hormonal urges like any 20 year old kid would have, so I get that, but it just felt weird to me that their first sort of storyline with him was for them to have sex, especially since you established too that Emma was someone who has sex a lot. And I feel like it would have worked better for me if that had been something that they had saved, because just the ethics of it feel a little off to me, where it's like, mm-hmm. he's clearly mentally unwell. He's clearly been in a room for a while. I don't know. There's just something that felt like it didn't exactly match up with the way the characters have been depicted to this point, that it would make sense to me that it would go that far that quickly.
Yeah. That's fair. I think it wasn't until episode 5.
Yeah, it might have been 5.
They actually had sex, though. So it was actually, and they met in episode 3. So, you know, it wasn't right away, but I understand what you're saying.
And I know it's weird for me because I'm usually the one to be like, more sex and things, please. I'm here for it. I think we're too prudish generally. But for some reason, it's hard for me to exactly put my finger on, but it just did not feel it, just especially with Sam being someone who's been locked up for so long. It feels like it was just a weird plot line to go down in as quick as it did. And again, if it happens in episode 5, I know it's a little bit longer, but still it felt a little, I don't know, it still felt a little off as well, especially since they made clear that he's not mentally well either, and there's also an element of like the ethics of that I don't think the show fully grappled with either.
Right. Yeah. I would agree. But you know, the idea of a soup virus, we find out like mm-hmm. what's going on in the woods. Dean Shetty had her family die in transoceanic flight whatever, the one that was abandoned by Homelander, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the best scenes of the show, you know, mm-hmm. a very heart-wrenching scene. And she's trying to study the children to engineer a virus that will kill all soups because she hates them. Go ahead.
Oh, I loved that plot line. I thought that was it was a way to make Shetty really interesting. That wasn't just like, because my initial thought on her character, she was sort of like vicarious Vought, like stand in.
I think that's what you're supposed to think. Yeah. You're supposed to think she's like a Vought extension.
Yes.
Right?
But no, she has her own motivations that go against Vought that I thought add a lot of depth to her character that made her really, really interesting.
I think my big question is this a good representation of how much stuff happens at Godolkin University in a year?
Yeah.
Because if so, very eventful. Very eventful years happened in the show. So in the school, I should say.
How long is the timeline of the show, too, by the way? It feels like it's been like only like a couple weeks, but is it meant to be like a semester?
A couple months?
Yeah.
A couple months, it feels like?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I think not very much time.
Yeah.
Not very much time. All right. Let's talk about Marie a little bit. Do you want to read this one?
Yeah.
Jesse, Jesse wrote all these things. Go ahead, Jesse.
Marie, worried for Emma, tries looking for her around the campus, eventually leading her to a dangerous... I see now what you wanted me to read. Read this one. A dangerous near sexual assault encounter with psychic student Rufus, whose penis is blown up by Marie when Jordan interrupts the assault. Marie and Jordan slowly begin to bond as celebrity soup investigator Tech Knight begins to investigate Luke's death as a cover-up for Vought. Tech eventually gets Marie to confess that she had nothing to do with Luke's death in front of her class, but eventually Marie goes to Victoria Newman, the head-popping politician from The Boys, with information on the woods and the soup virus. Newman uses the information to then get her hands on the soup virus, potentially tying into The Boys season 4.
Yeah. So, a bunch of stuff to talk about there. First of all, Tech Knight.
Oh, great.
Amazing.
Wonderful.
What an amazing character, and like the concept of the character. And the performance is amazing. And the only downside of it is that it was only one episode. I was like, maybe Tech Knight's going to be like the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. And that would have been awesome. But he was kind of disposed of within one episode. And that was the only bummer.
Especially, they even set up too that he's very much like he might die in the future because he has something going on in his brain that also is causing his desire to fuck every hole that he sees, which is also... pretty funny bit at the end there, which I loved. But yeah, it's like, oh man, so there's something to be said with the show being confident enough to create this great character and be like, nope, we're done with him. I'd rather that than just try him out.
And his interrogation of Marie was like amazing scene. It's just like, wow, like that's a really the way, like everything about that character was like the fact that cameras follow them everywhere, the wardrobe, like the way he spoke, I thought the lighting on the interview was like purposefully terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, they're like underlit from only one angle when he's like interviewing Andre. You know, it's just like
very much like a cheap TV sort of vibe to it that I loved. Yeah,
right. Like everything about it was awesome. The way he treats his staff, like it just felt like a fully fleshed out character that I was like, I completely buy that. And the idea of like a soup being a true crime host.
Oh yeah.
Is like a very, they do a good job of making him terrifying because they establish that like everyone who he thinks is guilty gets like completely effed up. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like he will like torment them or torture them and possibly kill them.
Yep.
And so, it's just a great idea for a character. I loved it.
And I think like he's used very effectively, especially for Marie, because I think that moment where she admits that she wasn't the one who fought Luke and didn't deserve credit for it, I think was a very important moment to get right because it is kind of a crucial moment for her character. And it's something that would be very difficult for her to admit because she has been very like, I need to get mine because of how she's been treated her whole life and deservedly so. So it needed to be a really strong scene to really sell that moment. And I think they played it really, really well with Tech Knight sort of drawing it out of her and pushing upon each one of her insecurities. And then there was also the underlying tension of like, he might even drag out of her that she knows about the woods, which at that point in the series was something that she didn't want to reveal. So there's just really well done layers of character work, extra tension, and then just the added fun of Tech Knight himself. So it was just, yeah, as you said, it was a really, really excellent scene.
Agreed. Now, Marie as a character throughout the season, I think has been a really strong protagonist. I think the show kind of started to get away from Marie as the show went on. Like she was like the main character in the first couple episodes. And then as the show went on, it started focusing on Emma more and Sam more and the Dean Shetty's machinations and so on. And again, I think that's like to the show's detriment a little bit. Like, I think like when it kept it tightly focused on Marie, it was like, this is a really strong story about this one character's struggle to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end, it was a little bit more all over the place. I will say what they did a good job of is going from, oh, this character's, do you remember on Family Guy, there was like one episode where all the Family Guy people got special powers and Meg's special power was she could grow fingernails really
fast?
Yes,
I do remember that. Yes.
And when you're introduced to Marie, and that's like considered a useless ability. And so when you're introduced to Marie, it's like, oh, this character's abilities are like kind of terrible. Like, they're disgusting to look at. No one likes them. They don't sell. They don't play well to the flyover states, you know, like whatever. But then by the end, it's like
badass.
This could be the most powerful soup of them all. In that she has the ability to, first of all, detect whether other people are soups. Like, that's a big deal. And B, like, she can single-handedly explode their body parts.
Yep. Blood daggers as well.
Blood daggers. She can make people's hearts stop. Like, she can... And it's like, wow, like by the end, she actually really does have a lot of powers. So I think they did a great job like conveying her abilities. I will say, what is up with Rufus, man? Like, she explodes his his penis, and in the next scene, he's walking comfortably.
Yeah, yeah. The only way I could make that make sense was like they must have someone on campus who has like healing powers and can like pull a green mile and just grab his penis.
It's so weird that they didn't explain that at all. I mean, one of my favorite shots is she explodes his penis, and then like they literally walk down the hallway leisurely afterwards. Yeah. Like,
that's fine.
Oh, that's not a big. No, it's fine. That happens every like now and then. You know, like. Meanwhile, he's what is he doing? Is he calling the ambulance?
Yeah,
like, what is, you know, like, who knows?
Yeah,
it's weird that they didn't do. I don't think they did anything to address it at all.
Especially like, that feels like a natural, just like follow up joke too. Like in the background, like the character bringing up like casually. There was not even like a gag to it. Like I feel like
One offhanded line. Like it's a good thing I was able to get so and so to patch me up you know.
Yeah, just something. Joking, like being like I had to get her to green mile me or something like that.
Something.
Alas, but yeah.
But yeah, what did you think of Maria as a protagonist?
I really liked her as well. Like, I think as you said, I think the show does get away from her a little bit, again, to its detriment. Not because I don't like the other characters. I actually found some of the ways some of the other characters get developed, particularly as we'll talk about in a little bit, Kate, I think was really interesting. But I do think it sort of like makes the show lose a little focus in the middle of the series, as I was sort of talking about in our spoiler-free section. And so I think that kind of, and by the end, I think it loses a bit of her plot lines where we'll talk about the finale a little bit more in just a second, but where like there's stuff where it's sort of offhandedly mentioned like, oh, we'll get you to talk to your sister. And it's just sort of like a line in the finale here and there. And it's like that was such a driving force of her narrative for the first three or four episodes that it just sort of seemed weird that it was kind of just tossed aside a little bit towards the end. And I'm sure it'll come back around in future seasons. But yeah, it just feels like it gets away from her. The other thing too that I found really interesting since we were talking about her powers is I actually really liked the connection to Victoria Newman. You know, we were talking about in the spoiler-free section about how her, like this show very much requires boys' knowledge, which I think with her character in particular is like a character you really need to know a lot about the boys. Not that she's a superfluous character in the boys. She's very front and center, but you do need to be invested in what the boys is going on to fully get what's going on with her here. However, what I did like a lot was her connection to Marie and drawing that out, because I actually hadn't made the connection that they had the same powers at all until that episode where I'm like, oh, that makes perfect sense. And it kind of exploded my mind and like, oh, it not only gives Marie some more connections and things to play with as the season went along, but as we do get into the boys season four, and presumably Newman will be a strong presence in that show too, kind of adds to her threat level as we go into that season too, which is an interesting sort of dovetailing I think the show is doing.
It was a great conversation that they had at the school. You know, they kind of meet in Victoria Newman's green room.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved the conversation they had where Victoria kind of presents the choices to her. She's like, hey, you can keep pursuing this little murder mystery or whatever, but like, you know, what's going on with the woods? But or you could become one of the seven, you know, become the first African-American woman member of the seven and have your own line of t-shirts and, you know, cookware and all this thing, you know, like, and then that's like, and then be friends with the vice president. And like, that's real power. And it is the bargain that is presented to most idealists, right? Mm-hmm. Is like, hey, you have these principles, you want to pursue them, but by the way, if you sacrifice some of them, you can actually achieve more power with which to exert more influence. And wouldn't that be better for the world?
But also right? become and, part of the system itself, which is yeah. very much it's a theme of both The Boys and Gen V. You know, we were talking about in our first review about how this show, both these series are very much about the institutions and how the institutions sort of prey upon individuals and sort of isolate them and make them focus on individualistic goals. And so I think that sort of, you know, choice that's presented to Marie, I think is emblematic of the larger ideas that the both series are trying to discuss of, do you work within your group of friends to fight back against these larger structural problems, or do you kind of think, or do you fall into the lie of you can become part of the system and change it from the inside? You know, you can just change, yeah. you can fix the system sort of idea. I think that was a really, really excellent play. And again, adds depth to both characters, I think.
Yeah. Finally, want to give a shout out to Newman's last scene with Dr. Cardoza, mm-hmm. where she kind of takes the virus. She's like, you're the only person that can replicate this, right? You know, wink, wink. And we all know what's going to happen,
oh, yeah.
but I still think the way it played out was pretty cool, where she's like, hey, don't worry, your family, it's all taken care of. She hands him a card, which, by the way, is like, she's only do that just
power
to look
move.
Cool, right?
Yeah.
There's no function. And then he looks down at the card, it's blank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when his head explodes. Like, he sees the blood drip down on it and his head explodes. It's a really amazing death. But I have to say, Jesse, kind of showy.
Yeah,
showy.
Yeah.
With the card, because it's like you're just leaving.
Those.
You're leaving what Colin Farrell in Minority Report would call an orgy of evidence behind.
Well,
the fact that his head was exploded, and B, like a card with her fingerprints on it. You know, like it looked cool, but it's like it doesn't make. It's like people dudes walking away from explosions without looking. Like it looks cool, but it's not exactly how it'd play out in real life.
I think it's just more my funny thing is thinking the logistics of she had to like go and buy like a bunch of blank like business cards and be like, oh, this is gonna be so good.
He's gonna be so confused for like 2 seconds before he dies. It's gonna be amazing.
She gotta get her jolly somewhere and be like, all right, this is gonna be so funny. So I loved it.
Yeah. He's going to be so confused before I explode his head 2 seconds later. It's like, really? Was it worth it? Was the whole setup worth that 1-2 seconds of...
I'm just imagining you're running around. It's like, oh, man, this Staples didn't have any blank business cards. I got to run over to the Best Buy or whatever. Got to make this gag work.
It's also like a really like, you know, incriminating, like, yeah, this woman came in and she just bought like 500 blank cards.
She asked me, can I buy one? She said she only needed one.
She bought it like a Lucy from a bodega. She's like, I just need one blank. She went to Vistaprint. She's like, I just need one blank.
One blank business card.
All right. Anyway, moving on. I will say, you know, looking over the notes, you say we've got to talk about Rufus' penis exploding.
Yes.
That was we did talk about it, but it just was really graphic.
Oh, it's very
right?
graphic, yeah.
Shockingly graphic.
Mm-hmm.
Got to give a shout out to that. And one of the most horrifying, like, ideas, which is why it's all the more weird that it was never followed up on.
I mean, oh, man, this is a dark joke, so apologies, but it's a trans woman. I was like, that's not that horrifying. I'm sorry, you can cut that
I've experienced worse.
I was like, oh yeah, no, that's fine with me. I've seen that happen. Welcome to having trans friends.
All right, well, let's talk about Jordan. Jordan and Marie slowly begin to form a relationship this season as Jordan struggles with not being the star pupil or Brink's favorite student, only caring about themselves at others' expense. However, Jordan and Marie awaken in bed together, having no memory of the woods or how they got there. After investigating why they and the rest of their group have no memories, they uncover that Kate was working with Shetty all along, erasing their memories to cover up the woods. I like this relationship. I think they have great chemistry. Yeah. And I do think I wish they had explored this idea, because there's this moment where Jordan turns into a guy.
Mm-hmm.
To be with Marie, because she assumes that's what Marie wants. And then, like, later on, later on, Jordan, I think, decides that that's not necessary anymore, and that's, like, a cool transition. But I do wish there'd just been a tiny bit more time dedicated to like how Jordan navigated that dynamic. What do you think, Justin?
Oh, I was going to agree. I mean, I put it in notes like the two things that I really loved about Jordan's journey this entire season was that it was not based around their gender issues solely, because one of the biggest negatives I see often with trans representation is that when you have a trans character in a show, it often becomes just about their trans issues, and their trans issues are not incidental. We saw it with their parents in episode, I think, 3, and then those moments with Marie, which I love, and I agree with you. I think that that was, especially in a show about teenagers figuring themselves out through sex and their bodies, about a gender fluid character like Jordan trying to navigate how to be themselves in a sexual situation with a partner, and like navigating their partner's comfortability, like something I've dealt with as a trans person, being like, you know, my body has had different looks and shapes and sizes throughout my own journey. And so I've had to explain being like, this is what I'm comfortable with, this is what I'm not comfortable with, and also navigating what the other person's comfortable with a trans person. So it was just, it felt very real. And it's something I've very rarely seen on television or anywhere at all, either realistically or superpowers, and I thought it was very well handled, and I wish we had gotten more of it. But even beyond that, I do love that Jordan's journey is more about their trying to figure out like how to wrestle with their own ego. And I love that we get in the flashback episode where we're in Kate's mind, we see the scene where they become sort of Brink's favorite student, and you realize how it's played very earnestly in episode 1, but in that episode, you realize that it was just Brink trying to cover up stuff going on with Luke and just handing Jordan this position just to kind of quiet them and stop them from doing anything. But Jordan taking that and feeling seen for the first time because someone in authority was saying that they trusted them, which is something that they hadn't gotten from their parents. And so it dovetails with gender issues, yet it doesn't directly... It doesn't directly have to do with them being a boy or a girl, but it comes from that same insecurity of them being a full person and character. So it was just so well handled, where you sense where this character's insecurities come from, but it's not directly focused on gender issues. So I thought Jordan was so well handled this season. And then kind of, as you mentioned, their relationship, with Marie was really, really also well handled, because I love their relationship like front to back, about how they start off as a place of being rivals, and then that sort of like their need to interact with each other sort of drawing them closer together. I just, overall, Jordan was great.
Not even rivals, like Jordan not even thinking
anything of Marie.
More, Marie is worthy of being around, you know, like to their in love with each other. You know, I bought it. Like, it's all, you know, it's a common trope that like you often have chemistry with people who you hate, you know, and to see it develop in this way, I thought was very plausible. And these actors have great chemistry with each other. All three of them.
I was going to say, it has to be even more complicated when you have to do it with two actors playing the same character. So
I also thought there was a kind of great moment in the dream sequence. You know, I guess like a lot of Boys episodes have dream sequences. This is the thing, is like, I remember there's a season of The Boys where there's like one whole episode that took place inside one character's head, and they pulled out that trick for this show as well.
Yes.
But where Jordan kind of confronts themselves. And that was like a really interesting dynamic to see like the two versions of Jordan talk to each other. It's probably the only time that we're going to get to see those two actors on screen at the same time, because they can only do so on a psychic plane or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's something funny that, spoilers for my own movie that I worked on, but it's a similar vibe where I have two characters essentially playing similar characters. And so I was just watching that. I was like, oh man, that's cool inspiration for my own stuff. It was very nice to steal from. So
I remember during our first podcast conversation about this, you were kind of mildly miffed at the fact that Jordan can transform from a man to a woman, and also has super strength now. Like, that was a new thing. Well, not only do they have super strength, apparently they also have like sonic blasts that come out of their hands is another
thing. Apparently someone explained to me, like, and they don't, maybe we talked about it, where it's like different gender presentations of Jordan had different powers, and that's where they would switch during the fights. It's like, I think the guy Jordan has super strength, and then like like girl right. Jordan has like invulnerability or something like that. There was someone broke it down for me.
Well, they have like energy blasts mm-hmm. that come out of their arms.
Yeah.
But it's never explained in the show.
No, which I honestly, to a degree, I think there's someone who said it could have been communicated a little bit clearer. But honestly, yeah. Somebody said where the show doesn't sit there and be like, this is how my powers work. I appreciate that. I don't need someone to poke a hole through a piece of paper and explain to me how two pieces of paper can hold together that whole thing.
Yeah, the, you know, we travel through time on a straight line. But exactly. Like, the event horizon can fold time together. Okay, anyway.
Exactly.
All right, tell us about what happened with Andre this season, Jesse.
Hell yeah. Andre and Kate continue to grow close until Kate's duplicity is revealed, driving a wedge in their relationship. Andre spirals and also grows more distant from his father, a former Seven member, due to his father's awareness of the woods. That is until his father begins to have superpowered seizures, forcing Andre to run to his dad's rescue and reconcile.
So, I thought this plotline was fine. Mm-hmm. There was just not very much of it. I wish we had gotten a better understanding. Like, you know, Andre has daddy issues, and we get a sense of how well-respected Polarity is, but, like, we don't really know what the stakes are of, like, Andre and his family, of Andre not living up to Polarity's name. I don't think
it's
really well conveyed.
Yeah. I think
Andre's relationship... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry,
yeah,
go.
His relationship with Kate is kind of interesting, you know? Mm-hmm. Like... and there's a great moment in the dream sequence when we find out that he's been cheating. You know, he has been sleeping with Kate since like long before.
Yes. Yeah.
The relationship with Golden Boy ended, or, you know, Golden Boy died.
Mm.
And that was a really amazing sequence because everyone's like watching the TV screens where like the sex is playing out. And it's like, wow, that would be really uncomfortable if that happened in real life, right? When if you feel like...
Oh boy. And and also you're the weird memory ghost of your dead friend who can also, I guess, kill you in the dream. Yeah. Is there? It was actually very effectively handled. I actually we just to talk about it really quickly, since we already mentioned a couple times, the whole dream sequence where we're in someone's head, it appeared in The Boys, and it's like a regular trope in a lot of different media recently, where it's like we're going inside someone's head and we're going to like see different memories. It's kind of a regular sort of storyline that you see often in shows, particularly genre yeah. shows. Here, I thought it worked very well because of how much it felt like things didn't play by the normal rules, like Luke actually being dangerous within the dream and like turning on them outside of the memory and confronting them, as well as all of their different memories sort of merging together. And we each get different ones for each characters. I thought was a really clever way to play with that sort of established sort of episode format that I've seen. But yeah, I agree with you with Andre and his dad. It sort of devolved into where it's like that storyline is interesting. And I would have really loved to see like the pressure of being like essentially kind of being a legacy student. You know, my dad went on to do great things. He's known right. at this university. And I'm supposed to be like live up to that legacy that he had. And that's interesting and something that fits the sort of, you know, college storyline, but it mostly just devolves into Andre sort of like looking stoically at the window or like looking kind of upset or thinking about things. And it doesn't really, there's no real, really intriguing scenes until it's ultimately resolved at the end where his father has the seizures. So yeah, it was just one of those, like, I wish we had gotten more of like, again, something like maybe with his mother or other family members or something like with the Seven, just something to play on that a little bit more than we ultimately got.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into the Kate stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So Kate's duplicity is revealed. She falls into a catatonic state. The rest of the group enters her mind. You wrote here, enters her mind. I think they're forced into her mind.
Yes.
Right. And after a cameo from Kate's imaginary childhood boyfriend, Soldier Boy, they discover Kate has been helping Shetty siphon power from Sam to Luke without Luke's knowledge for years. Seeing Shetty as a mother figure after her own parents abandoned her when she accidentally killed her brother. After surviving her catatonia, Kat confronts Shetty, eventually killing her in the hopes of getting revenge for how she and other Supes were manipulated and treated. So I want to also praise the dream sequence in the show. I usually hate these freaking things.
Yeah, me
Jesse,
as well.
I don't like dream sequences in TV shows. I've already complained about it before, but basically it's like on Decoding TV, but basically it's like I'm already watching a fictional thing.
Yep.
Like I don't need to watch a fictional person have a fictional dream. Like just if you want to tell me something, Tell me something in the fictional world.
Yes.
But this is a very good version of the dream sequence. And I like how like it largely adheres to the rules of, for instance, Soldier Boy not knowing what truths have been revealed about the actual Soldier Boy in the boy show, because he wouldn't know, because it's Kate's memory of Soldier Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the part where he's like, look, if you want to survive, then the number one thing you have to remember is, and then he's dead. Annihilated out of existence.
Exactly.
Anytime that happens, I've seen that joke like 10 times. It always gets me every time. Mm-hmm. I love it. So, the idea of having stakes, like you die in the dream, you die in real life. Like that's all very, you know, standard. It's effectively done.
I should also say on that note too, the show, I don't hate dream sequences as much. I just often find them to be just a forced way to get like a character that died to come back into the show or something. It's like, oh, we want to have this guest actor come back for an episode, so they're a dream that they're seeing or something like that. Their hallucination that they're having. I just find it very tropey. This didn't do that. And then also the storylines that I hate the most, I despise memory loss storylines. Mostly because when memory loss storylines are done in shows, I often find they lose all tension and deflate the storyline and just made to keep things running for a little bit longer, like add an episode. Because usually you're just waiting for the characters to figure out stuff that you already know as the audience member. And so I just find them sort of just trying to run in place a lot of the time. Here it works really well because of how it plays into Kate and how Kate eventually you learn that it's her and she is trying to make everyone lose their memories at different points and trying to sort of patch it up. But you see characters being like, I remember this part. You don't remember this part. Let's remember like the part where Maurice gets her memory erased, but then Jordan remembers stuff. It was very well played in how complicated that got. And that felt like it was actually adding to the tension rather than just sort of keeping wheels spinning in place that I find most memory loss storylines to be. So.
Yeah. There was some good conversation between Jordan recognizing that Marie had experienced memory loss that Jordan hadn't. Mm-hmm. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I wrote a couple of notes here that I wanted to mention before we get to the finale. One of them is one disappointment I had with the show is we don't get much more perspective from parents who injected the drug into the kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a thing, like it's referred to like, yeah, all these parents just wanted to make a quick buck off the kids. And it's like, what was going through these parents' minds? Like, were they tortured about it? Were they happy about it? You know, like, were they afraid? Did they feel betrayed when some of the kids ended up? Because every parent who either got killed or had a child killed because one of their children turned out to be Supes was in some way responsible for that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they injected Compound V into the blood. And I just wish we'd gotten a little bit more of that perspective. Like, what is going on in the parents' minds when they do that? Like, what's...
And there's also something to be said, too, about the... I mean, this might end up being way too complicated for the show in the time that it had, but there's something to be said. It could have dove into what the boys and Gen V does really well, talking about, like, racial dynamics of that, because I'm sure, you know, the rich, preppy families who are, like, able to pay for their kids' stuff are just like, yeah, we want to give our kids all the best drugs, where I'm certain, you know, you have more lower income, maybe minority folks who are just like, maybe this will be a chance to give my child a better life, you know, that sort of thing. So there's even things to be said about, like, differing parents' motivations across class and racial statuses, which would have been interesting to explore.
Indeed. Couple of other quick notes, and then let's get to the finale conversation. I also wrote down, like when I was watching, I just wrote down a few observations I wanted to share throughout the course of the season, and it doesn't fit neatly into anything we've discussed so far. Don't love the plot of an institution developing a deadly virus in a lab. That's
what I wrote. Yeah. I thought about that too.
So, and then I do think like all the Supes screaming, "You will not control us," was very
I love that
evocative and upsetting.
Yeah,
you know, like in it. And it's also kind of interesting to reflect on the fact that like I was watching the Honest trailer for Gen V, and they're like, they pretty clearly make out Homelander to be a fascist in like the first couple seasons, but they're like, just in case you don't get the reference, he's gonna literally fall in love with a Nazi.
Yes. Very over.
And so the show is not subtle, and but yet many people still seem to miss the point. But I do think that like the "you will not control us" is like a very you know, evokes real life.
It evokes
white supremacist movements.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm glad that the show continues to kind of tackle that, to lampoon that, to kind of bring our attention to that, because it's important. Yeah.
And I think it's important to recognize too, like, this is a much better handling of it than Secret Invasion did earlier this year. I just want to draw attention to it because this is a super.
Literally, by the way, that sentence could be said about everything. Virtually
literally
every
everything.
Show
yes.
And every topic.
Yes. Okay. Oh, ahead. I'm well aware, but I at least want to. It's just an interesting parallel to me because you have this show, which on Gen V and The Boys as well, because it also uses very much like Trumpian political stuff for Homelander throughout that series as well. It's very clear in how it's utilizing that imagery and how it's targeting that imagery and how it's associating that imagery with certain viewpoints, whereas, you know, something like Secret Invasion just seems to do it for aesthetic, where you have, like, you know, people in red hats shooting up lizard people controlling the media, and I'm like, that's just leaning into anti-Semitic conspiracy theories without any analysis of that. So it was just an interesting contrast to me to see a show, a superhero show no less, that was using it with with precision in terms of its satire versus something like Secret Invasion, which just felt like it was just doing it to give it the sense of weight.
Versus Secret Invasion, which borrowed almost directly from the protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Yep.
Without seeming to know that it did so.
Yep, exactly. That show is just straight up anti-Semitic conspiracy theories put in the MCU, and that's wonderful. Love that for us.
Well, fortunately, no one is ever going to speak of it again. So.
Secretive. What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Let's talk about the finale of Gen V season one. Mm-hmm. All right. So in the finale, Vought CEO Ashley arrives at God U to try to spin Luke's suicide and find a fresh member of the Seven. Kate and Sam work together to release the Supes locked in the woods, leading to mass chaos on campus as the Supes begin to rampage and murder any non-Supes in their path. Emma confronts Sam, who accuses Emma of only caring about herself, ending their relationship, and asks Kate to take away his ability to feel emotions. Andre learns that his father's seizures were caused by brain damage caused by his superpowers, something that may also, in fact, impact Andre himself, causing the two to reconcile. Marie, Jordan, Emma, and Andre attempt to stop the chaos, eventually taking down Kate as Marie learns the true extent of her powers. Homelander arrives. Dun-dun-dun!
Cameo.
And accuses Marie of attacking her own kind and shoots her down. Marie, Jordan, Emma, and Andre all awaken in a strange room with no idea where they are or how they got there. In an after-credit sequence, Billy Butcher from the Boys franchise arrives to investigate the woods ruins, presumably in search of the soup virus. So that is the finale. Some great sequences in the finale, mm-hmm. like lots of people getting brutally murdered. The only weird thing about the finale was how often Kate would just seem to sneak up from off screen and touch someone.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. You have a touch-based power ability. You just need to figure out ways to like get in there.
And the way to do it is, even though you would totally be able to see her if you were the person on screen, she appears from like out of frame and touches the person. And
it's like, it's almost pulling a reverse Batman. You know, those things where it's like, mm-hmm. turn around and Batman's gone. It's like, turn around and she's there.
Yeah, she's there. Yeah. So there were some good moments there, but yeah. What did you think of the finale?
I thought it was a really, really strong finale. I had a friend of mine, literally, I was watching, text me, he's like, are you watching the finale? Because it gets wild. And I will say, like, the action sequences in it were just A+, in my opinion. I thought they were all very effective. It would have been very easy for the show to like lose weight in those moments because the finale is a lot of action sequences, but everyone feels unique. It feels like it adds something new. It doesn't feel superfluous. Like, you get the moment where Marie sort of learns that she can sense other people through their blood, and we get that with Translucent Sun, who we've been seeing throughout the whole season. You get the fun stuff with you know, Marie throwing, you know, blood knives at people. Soups from the woods, like going around and being like, are you a soup? Nope. And then going to the next one and blowing that person up when they weren't a soup. So
that was most upsetting, mm-hmm. scene of the episode was when he goes up to this person and he's like, are you a soup? And she's like, no, I'm an adjunct professor of marketing.
Yep.
That woman is making $18,000 a year, mm-hmm. teaching at Godolkin University. She probably has had a very difficult life.
Yeah. Not anymore, I guess.
And her reward is like, she gets burned. Her skull is burned alive by, mm-hmm. that soup. I was like, Wow, yeah, that was harsh, but also very appropriate for the boys. I love the scene where Marie uses the blood knives to like kill the person heading towards the helicopter. Yep. That's an amazing moment, and it does, it, you know, it raises the, it reminds me of the fact that this is one of those shows where, you know, when you watch the Avengers, like Loki comes in and, you know, throws a bunch of, like, things blow up and
no one's hurt.
No one's hurt. In reality, there's like, you know, body parts flying everywhere and people dying left and right. And like in the Battle of New York, there would have been. And but you don't see any of that. And like a show like Gen V and the show like The Boys actually shows you what the human cost is of superheroes gallivanting around. Anyway, Jesse, I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No. What I mean, that's I agree with you completely. I mean, it's something that the boys and Gen V has been directly confronting with stuff like they make fun of Zack Snyder superhero stuff, which like the big criticism of Zack Snyder, especially Man of Steel, is he literally blows up the entirety of Metropolis and it's it's leveled and you hear shittier screams and everything's like, oh yeah, it's all great, we're good. So yeah, I mean, like it's an intentional thing on the point, I think, the point of the series to do that, and I think it was very effective on that front. I'm curious what you thought of Kat and Sam sort of turn to be genocidal at the end. Because I was trying to square in my mind, it's like, it makes sense for me, but it is so quick to go extremely brutal. And I think it works well enough because of how effectively, we didn't talk about it too much, like Kate's trauma and manipulation by Shetty worked. And then Sam, I could buy a lot more because of how much he's been abused throughout his whole life. So it was just an interesting sort of like, wow, this escalated very quickly moment. But I think it was generally very effective.
The Shetty stuff I'm still kind of working through, honestly, because there's a really beautiful scene where, you know, Kate has been mind controlling her friends all season, right? And by the way, there's a really effective sequence where we see that she has made Luke forget things many, many times, mm-hmm. which is like really haunting. I guess I am curious, you know, I want to answer your question, but yeah. I want to take another tangent,
sure.
if I may.
Please.
Which is, how would you feel if one of your friends had been, you find out one of your friends had been mind wiping you like once or twice over the course of the last like 6 months for very important things?
Oh, I would be like, extremely pissed off. Yeah, it wouldn't. Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would be much more pissed off than I think a lot of these characters would be. But then also somebody said that it's a slightly more normalized, I guess, to a degree in this world, but not too much.
I think they clearly saw it as a red line, you know, like they were really upset about it, but there was no real effort at understanding why Kate would be doing this.
Well, I think that worked in the flashback sequence where they saw how she was manipulated by Shetty. And I think that that empathy is partially what led them to being more forgiving or at least understanding of Kate's position. So I think that ultimately worked for me. And I buy it overall too, that Kate would have this turn and would have made these choices because again of how much she had been manipulated by Shetty. Like the sequences where we do see in her mind and we see that, like we see the moment where she killed her brother and how much her parents just like checked out after that and be like, she's locked in a room, we're never talking to her, like just the emotional and physical abuse that she faced that Shetty then came in and took advantage of. And then Kate seeing that and kind of starting to recognize how she had been used, I could very much see this turn for her.
Yeah, that's fair. Every parent, other than maybe Jordan's, by the way, seemingly is just like, how dare they have superpowers
that we gave them.
No, none of the parents are like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, none of the parents are like, I saw this coming. You know, none of the parents are like that. Yeah. So they obviously perceive it as a violation. That's completely fair. And I think there's like an understood, it almost feels like there's an understood rule, like the thin soup wall, as it were, of like, you never use your powers on each other. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I think they just have this rule and like, if they do use it on each other, then it's like really upsetting to everyone. But the Shetty stuff. Okay. So, there's this actually very powerful scene where Shetty kind of spills her guts to Kate and is like, hey, like, yes, I'm trying to annihilate your entire species, but I still love you. And then Kate kind of reads her mind and is like, hey, you're not lying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very beautiful moment. And I thought, oh, maybe Shetty and Kate will actually remain colleagues or friends or whatever. Next scene, Kate is causing Shetty to assassinate herself, which I thought was like, what happened there? I guess like it wasn't that important to Kate that like that Dean Shetty was telling the truth, or that other things were more important, like the fact that Shetty wants to exterminate all soups, right? Like, so, but
it does seem like there is a missing link there. Like,
I wish there was something more there to explain what, because honestly, until Dean Shetty is bleeding out on the floor, I literally thought the whole thing could have been a setup.
I thought that too.
I thought they were like teaming up and they're faking Shetty dying, you know.
Yeah, I thought that.
And then when she says like, don't help, she says to Marie, don't help. I'm like, oh, because this is all fake and Shetty's still alive. Like, but no, I really think it does seem like Shetty is dead.
Yeah, I think she's very, very much. The thing that I thought was going to happen that moment was Marie was going to use her blood powers to keep her alive was also my thing.
Yeah, well
that's
Kate,
why
Kate
says
her.
Don't help. Yeah.
Kate stops
yeah.
her. Don't help.
Exactly.
Right? Which is very like.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Again, it's one of those things that I could buy, but it just feels like there is like a missing, like the scene should have gone on longer, like the first scene with Kate, just like there's a few missing lines of dialogue or something where that turn happens. So
I agree. So that's just like Rufus's unrepaired yeah. genitalia. Like that's another scene where I'm like, huh, what was going on there? But yeah, Kate wanting to kill all humans. Mm-hmm. That makes sense because obviously they've put her through a lot. Shetty has been deceiving her. They want to make a super bioweapon for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I could understand a college student being really upset and feeling like they need to take a maximalist approach to that situation. Whether Sam would join her, like I honestly thought Sam was going to still be on Emma's side all the way until the end. Because when he was like, when Sam was talking to the ghost of his brother and he's like, you can stop Kate right now. I literally thought Sam was going to punch a hole in Kate. I literally thought that was going to happen. But instead he says like, make me feel nothing. And that's and I thought even after that, I thought he was going to punch Kate.
Yeah.
But nope, he and Kate are teaming up for good. It seems.
Yeah. Which I actually liked too, because it does speak to Emma's failures throughout the season. I think not really a failure, more she had a lot of stuff going on and wasn't there for Sam in the moments that I think he needed her, and like touching upon his trauma, like when she did forget him. And again, not her fault, but it does sort of, I see why it pushes Sam away and pushes him to that extremist point of being like, I don't trust you and I'm going to do this because I want to feed into my rage at how I've been treated for so long.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Homelander shows up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal. But again, I mean, Anthony Starr is awesome. The character's awesome. It's great that Homelander shows up. My whole thing is, you know, the complaint I started this podcast episode was like, I wish the show didn't tie into The Boys so much. And with Homelander showing up, it just raises all these questions. Like, what's Homelander been doing this whole time? Like, what is, you know, and like, because we've heard that he might go on trial for killing the guy at the end of season three, right?
Season three, right?
And so it's like, what is his experience of this? Like, and there's just like a lot of confusion, basically. Like, he shows up and we think he's going to like stop the thing, but then he actually goes against Marie and presumably rearranges everything so that Kate and Sam are heroes, even though there's like thousands of witnesses to the opposite. You know, like, it's just a lot of questions that, like, I don't even know if the show knows it asked. What did you think of Homelander's appearance?
I agree. I think what the biggest question mark for, well, going back a little bit, the thing I liked about Homelander showing up is it does work for me in the sense that, you know, we always watch different like Disney Plus Marvel shows and being like, well, why doesn't Samuel Jackson call up Captain America or Iron Man or whoever?
Like, have you played Spider-Man 2, the video game?
No, not yet. It's on my list next.
Well, in New York, there's like Avengers Tower is right
there.
Yeah,
and then you're like, why is
But meanwhile, like, the world is falling apart. No Avengers are showing up,
Yeah, I feel like Captain America could fix this in like 2 seconds if he was here. So yeah, it works in that sense of like, okay, it does make sense that someone would show up here and Homelander makes sense. But yeah, it does. It's I think the reason it's hard to parse out is that we don't have the context of season four of The Boys. Whereas like the little hints that we had gotten earlier this season where it's like, he may be on trial for that guy, or like you hear some of his viewpoints being like, you know, like superhero supremacist, I guess, essentially. Those are like nice little teases for season four. But when he shows up here and he's very much yelling at Marie, like, we are attacking your own kind, I can make the connection of like, he has some weird, like, again, superhero supremacist stuff going on. But it just feels like I don't have enough context for what's been happening with him the past few months to understand where he's at as a character to make this yes. very, very important decision in the climax of this show.
I agree.
And so it's hard to hinge such an important plot point for the series going forward on a character who I don't have a context for at this moment to make that decision.
It's a move that I would find really hard to forgive for another show. Mm-hmm. I have to say, mm-hmm. like if this was like Secret Invasion, if Secret Invasion did some really nutty thing at the end, oh wait, they did. But you know, if some other show did this really nutty thing at the end where they're like, a character from another thing shows up, you know,
yeah,
no context for what they've been doing, and then they do a major thing, and like, by the way, the whole status quo of the show is reconfigured. I'd
based
be like,
on that, yeah.
Well, that's just bad storytelling. Like, that's just not good. Mm-hmm. The show has earned a lot of my trust this season, mm-hmm. and so I have faith that it's all going to make sense at some point, but it's a pretty big reset. It's basically like, hey, everything you just saw, none of it mattered. Yeah. Like nothing that happened in the last 60 minutes really mattered. Like,
and we'll carry weight. Yeah.
One person came in and basically reset everything, and nothing really mattered. We could have just started at that point, honestly.
Yeah, and it makes me curious to see how much, you know, this season of Gen V is going to tie into The Boys, because my initial feeling on it was going to be like, you know, Gen V may rely heavily on The Boys at certain points, but The Boys is not going to rely on Gen V. But given so much of what appears to be the next setup for this season, I was looking at an interview with Eric Kripke, the showrunner of The Boys, was talking about how they very much have a plan of like, this will lead right into The Boys season four, which will lead right into Gen V season two. And like, they're going to sort of like bounce back and forth between the two of them going forward in terms of their storytelling. So it seems like there's going to be a much more direct line between the two shows. Like, Bailey Butcher is going to be looking for the soup virus next season, which is going to be a big plot point of the season four of The Boys, but it gets created here. And also it looks like, you know, we're going to have Victoria also having the soup virus, which is going to be a big status quo change as well. So like, I'm curious to see how much that influence is going to go both ways, or if it's all just going to be The Boys influences Gen V, but not too much the other way around, and it's just sort of yada yada when it comes to The Boys. So I'm just very curious.
I actually think that's great, honestly. Like, I think, like, you know, one of the many issues with the Marvel TV shows is you literally don't need to watch them at all.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You could have not watched WandaVision and walk into Multiverse of Madness, and literally the events of WandaVision are mentioned in one sentence.
I would say, but Doctor Strange mentions that he doesn't care about the town.
Oh, are you here about all those people I mind-controlled in WandaVision?
Nah,
that's a completely unrelated topic to what I'm doing here. You know, like, it is completely inconsequential. And it's like, maybe The Boys and Gen V is going to do universe building better than Marvel is at this stage.
That was exactly Eric Kripke's quote too, where he was just like, we want to be able to do it better than Marvel, or something along those lines.
Right. Cause it's like, it's consequential. Like, you have to watch mm-hmm. Gen V to understand fully the next season of The Boys. Whereas like, Marvel wants to have it both ways, mm-hmm. right? They want to have it be like an interesting adventure, but also if you don't watch it, it's fine. That's kind of what their approach has been up till now. I say this not having seen the Marvels yet, which I will tomorrow, and I will have a different. I may change my opinion on that after that.
Yeah, that'll probably be the big telling point, considering how much two of those characters are very influenced by the shows.
absolutely. So okay, so at this point though, it does appear that it will be integral, and that's cool. I support that. That's cool with me. It makes Gen V feel essential and not just like a commercial for The Boys necessarily, especially with all the work that it's done with the characters. So. Okay, any Other thoughts on Gen V season one, Jesse Earl?
No, I think I've said most of what I wanted to say, but this season was really, really good. I loved the characters. I thought it had a lot of really interesting storylines. It managed to tell a really thoughtful sort of overall story while also tying in some really great character beats and character decisions that, again, tied in the whole overall theme of being in college and trying to figure yourself out in a world that does not care for you as a person. But you're told to sort of find a way to fit into it anyway. So yeah, I thought this was a great season of television, and you know, there's some wrinkles here and there, but you know, it's a season one of a show. And so going into this next season of The Boys and into season two of Gen V, whenever that's going to happen, I think this is promising for both shows. So
I agree. And I want to give another shout out to the casting.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of these cast members has a distinct look, has a distinct personality, has a distinct power set.
Yep.
And I think that's like an underrated fact is like, hey, we want you to cast a show with like five relative unknowns. And by the way, they all have to look really distinct.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you, it's very hard to mistake any of these characters for the other character.
Yeah.
And I think that's like just a huge achievement to be able to do that. And like, you look at the character, you know instantly who they are and what they're doing in the show. And that's like hard to do. So I just really love the casting. Love the action, the goriness, the bloodiness. I love Tech Knight. I love, you know, there's so many things about the show that I had such a great time with. I just felt like it was very solid storytelling overall.
Yeah.
And so I had a great time watching the show, and I had a great time discussing it with Jesse Earl. Why don't you let folks know where you can find more of your work on the internet, Jesse?
Yeah, you can find me at Jesse Gender over on YouTube, which is where I do my video essay style of videos. Do things on science fiction, fantasy, queer issues, sort of it's a potpourri of any of the things that we've been talking about. So if you like how I talk about, you know, this show, I do that same sort of analysis over on my channel. I also have a secondary channel called Jesse Gender After Dark, where I do more individual episode reviews of shows like I'm reviewing Invincible as it's coming out, also on Amazon Prime. I've been doing shows like Star Trek, Star Wars, the Marvel shows, things like that. And then I also have a podcast of my own called, right now it's called the We Are All Pawns podcast, covering the TV show The Prisoner. The old UK allegorical series. And then when that ends, and presumably hopefully the SAG strike ends, and we can talk about, you know, more modern TV shows. It's a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast as well. So you can check that out. And then the final thing that I should mention is I made a movie between last time I spoke with David. I've been filming it and it's in post right now, called Identities, starring the wonderful John DeLancey, Abigail Thorne, a philosophy tube if you're on YouTube, as well as numerous other wonderful, amazing folks. So that will be out early next year and will be available on the streaming service Nebula, which is a wonderful streaming service that I and many other YouTube creators are on. And you can support us there, and that helps directly fund things like Identities. So check that out if you want to see what I've been doing on my own.
I've had a great time chatting about this show with Jesse. It's our first time like working together on anything, and I hope that there will be many more collaborations to come. I was a huge fan of Jesse's work before we started talking the podcast, and loved all of her videos. And so, and I encourage you to check it out because I found her videos to be very informative and enjoyable. Oh, so
thank you very much. This has been
huge. Thanks to Jesse for joining me for these chats, and a huge thanks to everyone at decodingtv.com who supports this podcast as a paid member. Really appreciate it. You can find more episodes of the show at podcast.decodingtv.com and find us on all platforms at Decoding TV. Later this week, we are going to be discussing the season finale of Loki season 2. And so that should be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for that. And thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time for another episode of Decoding TV. Goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.